is April 10th, 2017. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 638 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. We didn't have a show last week, for I apologize because I thought this show was good. Today's show was going to be coming last week, but it turned out we had to postpone a little bit. So I am very delighted to have today Rick Ankiel. Rick Ankiel, former Major League Baseball player, broadcaster for Fox Sports Midwest in St. Louis, and author of the new book with co-writer Tim Brown, The Phenomenon, about his career with the Cardinals and Mets and Braves and I think the Nationals as well. If you are a listener to this podcast, you probably know my history with Rick Ankiel, which is certainly, I wrote about him, probably most well known for writing about him during my time with Deadspin, where I think most people thought I was in love with him. I had not met the man. This is actually the first time I've talked to him. We follow each other on Twitter and have messaged each other on Twitter before, but I think he knows that I'm not a murderer. So that's good, because he's on the podcast with me. But Rick Ankiel is probably my favorite, certainly the most fascinating baseball player of my time. It is a delight that he has taken time out of his day to sit and talk to me about his new book, The Phenomenon, and I will be able to convince him that I'm not a crazy person. The music is by the Sundogs. We're going to have a new Sundog song here really soon, by the way, so hope you enjoy that. There's a new album coming out. We'll be promoting that here as well. As always, please give a review on iTunes. Helps people find the podcast, and holler anytime. But for now, here is my, frankly, long-awaited conversation with Rick Ankiel. All right, sir. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me. You and I have corresponded in the past, but I've never actually spoken to you. So I feel like the first couple seconds of this conversation needs for me to make clear that I'm not a strange person. I know it probably seems so back in the day. I remember getting an email from your wife in like 2008, 2009, just kind of like, hey, I saw you'd written about Rick online. I just wanted to make sure you weren't crazy. I was like, I'm not. I don't know if I convinced her or not, but I must not have done too bad because we're talking now. So thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, I think you did a good job.
Okay, good. Well, we'll see if you feel the same way at the end of the conversation. So the book is The Phenomenon. It's a terrific book. I actually wrote about it for the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. So when that comes out, you'll know that I wrote about that. That was me. And most, I gotta tell you, most, as you surely well know, most athlete autobiographies are, I wouldn't say terrible, but not the type of books that expand beyond someone that was already a fan. If you're a fan of the player, you'll want to read it. If you don't, you're not. But I think one of the things I think is great about your book, it expands on things that go outside of just baseball, and I think will have a lot of appeal for people, even if they're not huge baseball fans. When did you decide you wanted to start doing this? I'd always thought that this would make a great, that your story would make a great book, but were you always sort of private as a player, and I was wondering if you had reservations about jumping into this.
Yeah, you know, at first I wasn't sure, and you're exactly right. And I had been approached when I was still playing and in uniform, but I just thought the timing wasn't right. And I felt like it would, you know, it'd be a distraction, not only for me, but possibly for my teammates. Because along with the book, there was an offer to do a movie. And I just felt like if I'm in uniform and there's something at the box office, it'll be strange, a distraction, to say the least. You know, once I got done playing and I retired, you know, and talking with some people in the circle of trust that I have and, you know, I realized that I could help people, and the timing was right. I was finally done playing, and I was, you know, I could be open about what I went through, and you know, I was ready to talk about it.
It was an amazing thing, because as I chronicled a lot of, I was doing Deadspin when you came back. I just randomly happened to be at the game that you came back and hit the home run in your first game back, and we'll talk about that in a bit, maybe for 4 days. But I'm always curious when you were playing and this was all happening, you talk about your circle of trust and your people. I will say it's amazing how all of this that you were going through, it's one of the amazing experiences of reading the book, is all the stuff that you were going through during when this was happening, when it was happening, I had no sense of what you thought about any of this. Like you were never hostile with the press, but I never had any idea when all of this was happening, both the good and the bad, what you were thinking about it. Were you wary of the press? I can imagine the last thing that you wanted with everything that you were going on was to go give a long, heartfelt interview about it.
Right. Well, when I was going through it, it's hard enough to go through it in general. And now I'm talking about the, you know, working on the control issues right. of the pitcher. And, you know, to be completely honest, I did, you know, the media was asking me questions that I couldn't answer. You know, hey, what's wrong? I don't know what's wrong, right? We, to this day, maybe we still don't. But we know what happens after, you know, somebody goes through it. You know, what happened was, too, is that when I, you know, that 2000 playoffs, when I, you know, was throwing balls off the backstop and really going through the some of the worst of it, especially on the national stage, there was just some articles written that really, you know, that upset me and just struck me the wrong way. You know, it really made me kind of just turn my back on the media, so to speak. It's almost like, and let's be honest, it's a better story if I was throwing a ball to the backstop. So it just left a bad taste in my mouth. And I understand, you know, that it was the media's job to go write a story. But at the same time, with what I was going through, you know, it was hard enough on its own, let alone trying to answer questions about it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that makes the book so fascinating as someone that, again, followed that so closely when it was happening. It's amazing to kind of that you have even the recall of a lot of stuff that was going on at that time, because it was, you're very vivid in your descriptions, particularly when you talk about that game specifically, about how I think I love the way the phrase that you and Tim Brown came up with, the idea that you just kind of, after the first wild pitch, you just kind of looked at it curiously, like, that's weird. Oh, well, and kind of moved on. And I think it plays in a little bit to one of the things as a fan that was really exciting about you. And this is going to sound more highfalutin than I mean it, but there was a certain Mozart quality to you in the fact that you were really so young and so new and just doing this thing that people had been working their entire lives to try to master. And you seem to have mastered it at such a young age without really thinking about it. So the irony of then having this happen, I'm curious, when you were going through the struggles, you talk about this in the book a little bit, but like, it always feels like there's a separation. Obviously, there's been stuff that's gone on in your personal life and stuff with your father and so on. But do you really think the connection is there? Or do you still think this is just a weird thunderbolt that came from the sky?
I feel like it's a thunderbolt, because if you're going to say, well, this is because of some personal matter, well, then what was all that in between, right? And why was I so good for so long and then all of a sudden it just stopped? So for me, no, I just feel like, you know, I think that's a good description, the way you put that, as a thunderbolt. I just think it's something that happened and you know, it was unfortunate, but it was what it was. And once it happens, then you just got to deal with it and how to, you know, try to figure out how to get past it.
Yeah, I thought that's a good part of the book, too, is while people like me are on the outside are like having this big Shakespearean story about what this all means. And this is one of the fascinating things about baseball and all of this stuff. For you, you really get this across well in the book. It's just a day-to-day struggle. It's just shit you got to deal with every day. And I think that did it help almost in the moment not to have, like, you know, I remember the time thinking, this is one of my favorite players I've ever seen. I can't believe this has happened. This is hard for me to even look at. There's a video of you pitching, I think, for Memphis in 2007 that's like a snuff film. Like, it's like hard for me to watch. But like, when you're in the moment, it's just like something you just have to deal with in your everyday life. So you're not connecting it to some larger picture. Did that make it easier or did that make it harder?
What do you mean?
I just mean like exactly. the idea that like, when the story that's inspirational, like now we come back and it's inspirational because you come back and you hit and it was so exciting. But at the time, like, this was a tragedy. Like, did it feel like a tragedy to you, or did it just feel like this sucks? What is going on?
You know, it's more like this sucks. What is going on? Because I had to take the stance when I woke up every day that this is going to be the day that I figure it out. Right. And this is going to be the day that I'm me again. And I had to take that stance, because I feel like if I would have taken the stance of, or allowed myself to really dig into this as a tragedy, it just, now you're starting to go down the road of self-pity, and it's going to make it that much harder to get back to where I wanted to be.
One of the things that Tony La Russa has talked about to me, like as a longtime Cardinals fan, the smile that he gives when you hit that homer against San Diego is, I mean, it's almost unprecedented. That was a bigger smile than he gave when they won the 06 World Series. It was one of those big moments. It's really, and you just don't see it, like you played for him. You know, he's not a smiler generally. So,
Right.
but for me, that what I find, you know, his story he's written about in his book with Buzz Bissinger about how he felt like personally guilty, as if like this was somehow connected to you starting game one of the 2000 NLDS, and then them saying that Daryl Kyle was going to start it and so on. But in the book, you don't think that at all. You don't do you think you don't think there's any connection to him starting you that game and what happened?
No, I don't. And I can see from his perspective how, anyone in that position would question, of making that decision, but that's because of the result, right? And that's, hindsight's 2020, and we can all do it about a bunch of different things that has happened in everyone's life. But no, I don't make that connection whatsoever. Like I said before, I just think, it happened, and for me, it was just unfortunate timing.
When you one other I think really strong part of the book is you talk when you have that when you make the decision where you're going to retire, and then Scott Boras calls and says, "Ah, why don't you try hitting?" Which was really an amazing. I don't think anyone thought that's how that went down. It was really kind of a wild notion. But you talk about the idea of how relieved you were that you no longer had to pitch, that struggle was over. I'm curious. Do you miss? I know you don't miss the struggle, but like for a long time there, like for a large part of your life, you were this dominant pitcher. Do you miss that feeling? Like, do you miss striking a guy out, or is it now so tied up in what happened afterwards that you can't even appreciate that time?
There's a little bit of both in there, but no, there's definitely, and I've been asked this question a lot, like whether I liked pitching better or hitting better, and I love them both for different reasons. And it kind of felt like as a pitcher, you're pretty much you're going to succeed, right? Because as a hitter, if you're 3 for 10, that's Hall of Fame.
Right.
You're hitting 300. So as a pitcher, you're going to get more guys out. So there's kind of that difference. So I miss the dominance of being a pitcher, of striking a guy out or knowing that you're going to be able to throw it by him and there's nothing he can do about it. And then the same goes for hitting. I love being able to be out there and play every day. And even if you go 0 for 4, I can make a great catch or a great throw at the end of the game and still be the hero. So there's just different parts that I take away from each position. But I love them both. And then just to add on to what you said, those last, 2000s, when the end of 2000 is when I started having the throwing issues, and those next 4 years, in just grinding every day and the grind that it was, and really trying to figure out how to be able to compete and throw strikes again, I did lose some of that. It's almost as if I forgot how good I was. But you do, for me, I did kind of lose some of that. Wow, how easy it was and how good I was at the beginning.
I remember, and to me, one of the best parts of your story is as someone who, again, when you were a pitcher, like, I literally have an Ankiel 66 jersey. Like that was my, like you represented like youth and power as a pitcher. And I, as someone that followed you all through and was very invested in you coming back, regardless of how it did for the Cardinals at that point, I think everyone was all rooting for you. But I remember when you announced, when that happened, and you said you're going to come back as a hitter. I will confess, I was like, oh, you know what? Good for him. Like, obviously, he's never going, like, that's never going to work. Like, obviously, that's never going to happen. But that's great for him. If this brings him some happiness, that's great. I'm happy. I hope he gets that. So then to actually have you come back, you were an okay hitter as a pitcher, but I'm curious. Because I think when people talk about you being the natural, it's that like kind of natural ability. But you were a pretty good hitter as a pitcher. But when you actually concentrated full time on hitting, there were holes in the swing and all that. But did you anticipate that, wow, I bet I'll be a pretty good hitter? Or was it really just this will help me. I'm so relieved not to be pitching that I want to give this a shot. Like, did you think you were going to be good? Did you think you'd make it back?
Well, I didn't know. And in the, when the decision came and I'm sitting on my couch at home that day, I'm thinking about it for a couple hours. Once I let the idea sink in and really just try to wrap my mind around what I thought the future would be like, I started to get that warm, fuzzy feeling like this is going to work. I'm going to be able to do this. And that was the thing, when the next morning when I got to the stadium, my first day as an outfielder, it was just that the excitement of like, wow, this is going to be fun again. You know, I don't have to think about all the mental exercises that I had to do as a pitcher and what it took for me to throw strikes. I always knew I had power. The biggest thing was going to be learning how to hit when the pitcher throws you their full repertoire and they're not just feeding you fastballs, but now they're spinning you curveballs and they're throwing changeups and they're throwing cutters. And they're trying to get you out a little bit more than before. So my biggest thing was going to be learning how to hit all those pitches and being able to hit for an average as well as just for power.
You know, one thing, it's funny, I as a Cardinal fan, obviously, I think of that home run that you hit against San Diego in your first game back. But it's funny, when I talk to, like, I live in Athens, Georgia now, and I bring up Rick Ankiel, nobody brings up that you pitched, or they remember it vaguely a little bit, even though it was in that game. They remember that, but what they really remember is the home run you hit in the 2010 LDS. You hit a McCovey Cove home run in the postseason. I think only you and Bonds have done that. Never minding that, imagine getting to that point, but to be all the way back at that, just to be able, like, when you were doing that, when you were playing for the Giants in the postseason, how different was that experience, regardless of whether you're playing or whether you're pitching or so on, how different just as a human being, as a player, to have 10 years later be in the postseason in such an entirely different context and to be able to succeed like that?
Yeah, just to come full circle and you mentioned before, because I think this is part of the story, so I'll mention it. When I started throwing the wild pitches, it was against the Braves.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, and then to come around and be able to play for them in 2010 and hit that home run. For Bobby Cox, and growing up down in South Florida, the only station we had was TBS. So I was a huge Braves fan, and I grew up a huge, everything about the Braves and Bobby Cox, and I knew going into that year that was going to be his last year managing. And I started the season with the Royals and then got traded over there at the deadline to help them with their playoff run. It was like the baseball gods had opened up the heavens to me when that happened, because here I am. Now all of a sudden I'm going to get a chance to play for my childhood hero, being the Braves and Bobby Cox. And to come up in that moment and hit that home run there in the extra innings, just a phenomenal moment that I will never forget. It's the biggest home run of my career.
I'm always curious. Whenever I talk to athletes, I love talking to them about their retirement, because it's such a fascinating experience. I'm 41. You're 37. Is that correct? You're 37.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So for me, the idea, like everybody else is 41. I still feel like I'm just getting started in my life. Woo! It's everything points up for me, and so it's such a strange thing, which is totally not true. I'm lying to myself by that, but it's such a strange thing that to be 37 years old. You've been on for 3 years. You were 34 years old. I'm always fascinated how athletes deal with retirement. Do you think retirement was easier for you or harder for you because you had such an unconventional career? Was it easier for you to make that decision to walk away, or did you feel as much regret as I often find most athletes have when they retire?
No, I actually felt like it was easier, and just everything that led up to that moment, I just didn't really feel like I had anything more to prove. And the biggest thing too was, we had just had our second child. I dumped leave for 2 weeks and I come back and they're saying new sentences and new words. And I feel like, I felt like I was starting to miss, their upbringing, and I didn't want to miss that. And just everything else. I had a few injuries, just things leading up to that moment. All arrows pointed towards, I think I'll be better off being home with them and helping raise them. I would say I don't know if it's regret, but the missing part, I would say this year, I work for Fox Midwest. So I've been around the game a lot more the last 2 years, 3 years. And I would say this year is the first time that I'm really starting to look at it like, man, it would be really fun to be out there and be able to compete against the best in the world. And that's, I think every athlete will tell you that, there's something about, when you're in your professional league and you're competing against the best the world has to offer, whether it's an ego stroke or you know, it's something to hang your hat on. You go home every night knowing that not only were you there competing, but you belong to be there competing against those guys.
Well, I mean, you know, you're 37 years old. You're 5 years younger than Ichiro. Yeah, there's no way that you can't play left field better than Matt Adams. I don't know.
But, you know, I mean, it was my time to move on and be with my kids. And you know, I'm completely happy about the decision and, you know, thankful that I had the opportunity to do that.
I am surprised. I will say, as someone that followed you at your career, it's surprising to me that you would want to be a broadcaster. I think you're good at it. I've watched you many times that you seem to have a natural affinity for it. And maybe it's because you did so little talking to the press when you were playing. Is this something you always imagined doing, or is it just a way to get back closer to the game?
No, I never imagined doing this when I was still playing. I don't think I ever, you know, I'm not really sure what I imagined going for. I probably thought that my career was going to be awesome and I'd ride off into the sunset and fish for the rest of my life or something. But being as young as I am, that doesn't work either. And, you know, I'm somebody who likes to be doing stuff and the broadcast stuff, it's been a lot of fun. I didn't expect it to be this much fun, but I really like it and it keeps you around the game. And, you know, it's been great.
It's kind of one of the more powerful parts of the book, I think, is when you actually sit down with Steve Blass and you guys have, of course, he is the broadcaster for the Pirates and has been a broadcaster for a really long time. And one of the most amazing things about that section, because I read it and I was kind of blown away about how you guys kind of sit and look at each other with this mutual empathy, but also this mutual bafflement. It's like, yeah, I don't know what this was either. And now the idea of you having that kind of Blass career as a broadcaster is really kind of an amazing thing. I'm curious, what was it like? Was that the first time that you'd met him? Had you talked to him before when you talked to him for the book? Because you talked to a lot of people in the book about kind of what happened. Do you still talk to him, particularly even as a broadcaster notion?
Yeah, that was the first time that we had sat down and had a conversation that we had met. And you know, it was interesting to say the least. And it was just there was just so many similarities to what we went through and what we understood about it and about the Yips, that is. And, you know, I'm so glad we did it. So, yeah, we'll stay in touch with a text message here and there and just to check in and see how each other is doing.
All right. So then I want to be very clear on this because you've piqued my interest now. I know you were just kidding and I know you were not even kidding, but I know you were just saying, you know, being back around the game. You're only 37. You're only 37. You're there. They need a left fielder. They need a backup left fielder. Do you at least want to try some batting practice before the game and just see how it works out?
I had hip surgery in November. So that ship sailed. That answers that question for me.
Fine.
So that I'm not even, my body won't even let me question it. So I can't.
Okay. Well, it's fine. My body's been what's been keeping me from taking out left field too. So that's something that we have in common. All right, sir. It's obviously, I've been eager to talk to you for a long time. I thank you for taking the time for chatting with me. And the book is The Phenomenon. In all honesty, it is I am very skeptical. I review books for the Wall Street Journal and the Atlantic, and I write for a lot of places. And I generally don't like athlete autobiographies because they're usually just kind of a list. They're just a list of things that happened. But this is, I think, a particularly excellent book that I think people should read. So I'm glad, and it shows a lot of insight that I didn't know about that time. So thank you for coming and chat with me, and seriously, continue good luck with the book.
Thanks, Will. I appreciate it, man. Good talk to you.
Of course. Be safe. All right. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.